Today on First Lady and Friends, I had a great guest. His name is Jared Kwan. He's an author and a 2023 Spirit of Service Award recipient for the state of Utah. He's doing many different projects in the volunteering and service community. He sits on many nonprofit boards. He's really a volunteer extraordinaire. We've had a great conversation about how meaningful service is in our lives and all the great work that he's doing. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We're excited today to have a guest that I met a few months ago. His name is Jared Kwan, and he was a recipient of the Spirit of Service Award for the state. So a big deal. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. You've got your daughter here, which I'm really excited about. She refused to go on mic. So welcome also Lindsay. We're happy to have Lindsay here in the room with us too, because it's really important. I think I love that Lindsay's here, because I think, you know, we've been talking recently about the next generation. You know, my focus with Show Up is really like, how do we start making sure and being very intentional about passing on this, you know, this way of life, this serving and volunteering and making sure that, you know, our state continues to be the top, because it's really good for us. So, Jared, let's just give me a little background. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about where you grew up, a little bit about, you know, your family, just your life journey to this point.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and I never thought I'd ever leave Phoenix. I loved Phoenix a lot. When I got married, my wife did not love Phoenix as much as I did. She was from Utah. And we ended up moving up to Utah back in 2020. Or not 2020, 2000.
Okay.
And it was fantastic moving up here. A lot of her family is here, which was great. And during that time, we ended up having 5 kids. My kids are, you know, very special. My first had some medical issues. His esophagus wasn't attached to his stomach when he was born, which was kind of crazy. They don't talk about those things when you're learning about having kids.
Yep.
And then our second, we were very fortunate, was born up here. And at Primary Children's, he was born with only 2 chambers in his heart, which, you know, that's another surprise.
Jeez.
You never know what's going to happen. And then we had 3 fantastic, healthy daughters after them, which was great. Mm. But my time up here in Utah, I've kind of been all over the place when it comes to different jobs I've done. I worked security at the airport during the 2000 Olympics, wow, which was a lot of fun because, as you can imagine, all the celebrities coming through, all the athletes, which was really exciting. And then I've worked at various different places, but one of the neat things, I always wanted to be a published author, and I was very fortunate that I was able to get published in 2010. My first book came out, and I was really excited about that. The rest of the world wasn't as excited. I needed to work on my craft, which was great. And then I ended up getting more books published. Today I have 5 books published, which I'm very fortunate. But during that journey, I've done some really fun things. I volunteer a lot. For those that know me, I currently serve on 5 different nonprofit boards. I have a full-time job. I also, you know, work with my 5 kids. I love spending time with them. And then I also am a Twitch streamer. So I get paid a little bit to go play video games too. So.
Oh my gosh. Well, that is the one that most kids are aspiring to. Sorry. I think all the other accomplishments, you know, for us adults think that's pretty great. But I'll tell you, I have a few kids that think that they're going to make a lot of money playing video games.
Absolutely. My son's dreams growing up were just to be YouTube stars and play lots of video games.
I remember the first time I walked down and my son was on YouTube, and I said, "What are you doing? What are you watching? Or what are you playing?" "Well, I'm not playing." I said, "Well, it looks like you're playing a video game. Why are you playing that?" And she's like, "No, I'm watching somebody else play a video game." And I thought, what is happening? I don't know what is happening right now. It seems crazy. But you're the only person I've ever met, like, live in person that actually does that.
That does it, yep. And I enjoy doing it. I love interacting with people while I play. And then sometimes I get to invite people who watch to come join me while I'm playing and get to hang out. So it's a lot of
what's
fun.
What's your game of choice? What is it that your sort of your specialty?
I think, I play a lot of Call of Duty.
Okay.
A lot of Warzone. But I played a bunch of Fortnite. Excuse me. A lot of Fortnite, which I tend to play a little bit more often with my kids, my daughter especially. We enjoy playing Fortnite together. But I've played lots of different games.
That is so fun. Well, that is... I don't want to pale your other accomplishments, but you are the first person I've ever met that actually is making money doing that. So I'll be able to report back to my kids that I am wrong. I can be wrong. it's really good. So let's go back. You grew up in Phoenix, and you know, was serving other people, was volunteering, was that part of your life growing up? Is that something that's come as an adult? Where did this bug come from that you felt like you needed to serve or you wanted to?
Yeah, great question. I feel like there are a few different phases in my life when it came to my volunteering. In my youth, I volunteered. I was a part of the Boy Scouts in Arizona, and we enjoyed going out to do different service projects. One of the most memorable ones, we helped clean up the Salt River. Some medical waste had gotten into the river, and so they like stopped it up, and there was a massive effort. It wasn't just some Boy Scouts. There was a lot of people out, and we went through and just helped pick up trash and medical waste from the river. And I remember that day especially because it was 123 degrees.
As it is often in Phoenix.
Right? And the fire department was out handing out water to make sure nobody passed out. Mm. And I remember how impressed I was with how many people came out to do it. It wasn't just a small group doing it. Like a large, large effort was put forth to just make that cleaner and better for everybody. But I've done, you know, different service projects, you know, growing up as a kid, and that left an impression on me. It was important to my parents to be aware of others. Sometimes it was during the holidays, you know, being willing to part with gifts that we didn't need as much to be able to help others. You know, those different little pieces of service. And then it wasn't until later that when I served my mission in Utica, New York, that I served doing some service projects for hospitals, as well as other like senior medical facilities and some schools, some YMCAs and things, which was really neat because it really diversified what I thought of service, where I could be. I always thought growing up, it was always a bigger project. Yeah. And then that helped me understand that really these opportunities are everywhere.
Yeah, that's incredible. So, so your parents probably instilled that in you, obviously. Is there anyone else? I think I look in my life and think of the people that I look to say, gosh, they're a great example of just somebody that went around. I mean, for instance, I remember there was a guy in our town and he owned a construction company. And so we had, you know, for our little small town, had more money than a lot of us. And I remember him. I probably tell the story, but like when I was a kid, my dad got really sick and had an autoimmune disease. Anyway, he went through a whole thing where he was in the hospital for a while. And during our lambing season, where we're on the farm and the lambs are coming, and it's just a really intense time of working and, you know, before school, up early before school, after school and evenings, taking care of these lambs while they're coming. And I remember thinking, as we went through this and we were just, it was just a really tough time. And all of a sudden some workers, just some big burly construction guys showed up on the farm and just started helping out, shoveling snow, getting, you know, moving equipment, whatever help we needed, they were just doing it. And I didn't know for a long time where these big burly dudes came from. And it was this friend of ours who owned this construction company who said, he just sent his employees up to do that. I mean, he was paying them to work for him.
Wow.
and he sent him up. So sometimes we're the recipients, which is hard sometimes. But I remember just always thinking about this particular man. His name was George Johansson. He was a dear friend of ours. And I just remember, you know, just always being so impressed and just the love I felt for him and him taking care of us as a family, just quietly. He didn't say anything. There wasn't a sign-up sheet passed around the congregation or anything like that. It was just, I see a need, I do it. Anyway, so I just feel like, I don't know if there's somebody like that in your life that maybe you look to say, you know, obviously my parents were great examples to me as well, but is there somebody in your life that you saw that made a big difference?
Yeah, you know, it's not a specific individual, but no matter where I was in Arizona, in different areas we had moved, it was always the scout leaders. The scout leaders who were so selfless, they weren't getting paid to be there to be, you know, Boy Scout leaders, to go out on campouts with us, to go help us with these, you know, these skills that we would come to use later on and really enjoy. Just as I got older, the more I appreciated the time and sacrifice that they put in to give to the boys, you know, what they could to help them grow and progress. And that was kind of a blueprint example for me to understand, okay, it's something that I can do also. Because they were doing it as, you know, professionals. They had families to take care of and things. And you just don't have a lot of free time to just, or free income to just go do, you know, big projects like this. So it was really impressive to me.
Mm. You know, it's so, so true. You know, of course, all three of my boys went through the Boy Scouts program from the time they were young and you know, on up. But there were those. Somebody was telling me the other day about, you know, my mom really got, you know, my Eagle Scout Award. And I thought, I don't know that I can say that I did get, I mean, obviously I helped the kids and the paperwork in and of itself, I deserve an award. But like,
yes.
But like, I'm telling you, just, you know, chalk that up to when moms run the world. It would be different. But I do remember thinking, you know, these kids would not have, you know, gotten this award or made it through this program if it weren't for incredible leaders and volunteers in that program and youth programs that my kids were involved in. And I just, my hat goes off and my heart is so grateful for people that helped my kids as well. I heard I think it was a tweet or something. It said, I wasn't expecting as a parent to how much I would love the people who love my kids. So I kind of think of that as a service as well. The people, you know, those scout leaders, those youth leaders that love your kids enough to take the time. I think it's really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk more about the specific projects that you've been involved in, and we'll do that when we come right back. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We have Jared Kwan here. He is a Spirit of Service Award recipient, and you've just done so much. It's absolutely incredible. Let's talk kind of some specifics about what you've been up to and some of the things that you're passionate about. You mentioned that you are on five different nonprofit boards. Let's talk about them. Like, what are they, first of all? What are those nonprofits? And then let's talk about a little bit about each one, what their specific mission is, and why you're so passionate about what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. So of the five nonprofit boards, I have the League of Utah Writers, which has been around. It just celebrated its 88th birthday.
No kidding.
Which
wow.
Is, yeah, it's That's been around incredible. for a while, which is really cool. And they're more driven towards developing authors, developing people into getting published or going as far as you would like to when it comes to your writing adventure, which is really cool. The second one would be the Teen Author Boot Camp. They've been around for 18 years now, helping teens develop. They drive a very specific teen conference. They typically get about 900 teens per year into a conference, and they get these wonderful professionals from all over the world to come and teach and help the teens level up their game to be able to, you know, decide if they want to pursue professional, you know, writing or just to develop their skills so when they enter the, you know, college or professional realm that their writing is at a better level, which is really cool. And then there's the LTUE, which is an acronym for Life, the Universe, and Everything. And it's celebrating its 42nd year this year, which is really cool. Its nonprofit is really driven towards giving college students access to more resources, and not just writing resources. It could be artistic resources. It could be resources for movie making, podcasting, these different things, which is really cool. It's a very inexpensive conference that they run in Provo every year, which is very impressive that they've made it to 42 years, mm-hmm. and we're really excited about this year for them. Then there's TEDx Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. TEDx Salt Lake City is having their 12th year this year. And the neat thing about TEDx Salt Lake City, a lot of people don't know, they really don't know where TED Talks come from. I mean, they just know they exist and they like them. But TEDx events happen all over the world. And then they're authorized by TED. And when the speakers go through the process and they're recorded and then are put out into the universe, TED then approves them to be on the TEDx YouTube page. And then a handful of them then get curated to be on TED.com and really be celebrated at a higher level, which is really cool. So for 12 years, it's been helping Utah, Salt Lake voices who have these wonderful ideas to share. We help them develop them and get that onto that platform, which has been a lot of fun. Then there's Storymakers, formerly known as LDS Storymakers, which is a big conference that happens in Provo for writing professionals. In that conference, they make a big effort to take things to a very, very high level with their conference, which is really cool. They get a lot of agents and editors. The League of Utah Writers does that with their conference as well. But Storymakers, they're based in Provo, where the League of Utah Writers is based in Salt Lake. So a slightly different area, but very similar missions behind what they do.
Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like obviously writing is your passion. And so these nonprofits all clearly have a theme that you're involved in. So this is, and I love that. I think when we're passionate about something and we get involved in helping other people work through and get better and serving in that way is really powerful. Talk about maybe where did the passion for writing come from?
So the passion for writing really came when I was in the fourth grade. So education when I was growing up was definitely very different than it is today. And I had managed to make it to the fourth grade and I really didn't know how to read or write. Mm-hmm. I was kind of faking it. Like I figured out how to pretend like I knew what I was doing. And my fourth grade teacher recognized Mrs. Ferrier. I love Mrs. Ferrier. She
go teachers. Woo.
Right? Yes. And she recognized how far behind I was with everybody. And she pointed that out to my parents too. We wanted to make sure we came up with a good game plan. And she spent a lot of extra time in the classroom with me. My parents spent extra time with me, you know, helping develop those skills. So the fourth grade is when I started to really grasp reading and writing, which was great. But at the same time, that's when computers first made it into school. It was the Apple IIe's. So that tells you how old.
You and I must be the same age because I remember the first computer I had in a classroom was in fourth grade. So
yep,
exactly. We got to be close.
Right there. So yeah, the Apple IIe, which, you know, of course, learning how to write doesn't mean your handwriting is legible.
Yes.
But the computer made it so clear. Yeah. So I could. And so I started to tell these fantastic stories. I would type them out and I could see what kind of impression the teachers began to ask me. They're like, hey, where did you read this from? Or where did you find this? I'm like, no, I just made this up. This is what I thought would be cool. And when I found that power, that's when I'm like, this is something I want to do more of. I really want to affect, you know, positive change on everybody moving forward.
Did you find, so you said you kind of reading and writing kind of clicked. Did you find that, and do you find maybe in your writing, Do you find that reading is a big part of that?
You have to. Yeah. When it comes to reading. Now, I cheat. Like, I do a lot of audiobooks.
Yeah. Same, same.
That's how I consume. I'm not as prolific a reader as my daughter. Lindsay, I think she read 33 books this year, last year.
Wow.
Just, she can devour books. I was impressed.
Amazing.
I could buy her a book, and 2 days later, she's like, this is what the book was about, and I finished it. I'm like, holy cow.
That's so great.
That's a skill I wish I had. I really don't. Yeah. But audiobooks, I read a lot of books. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the neat things about reading other books and hearing the way that people, you know, talk about their different experiences or the way that they decide to relate a character is so important because it helps me understand how to better do it myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, I always hear, you know, I'm not much of a writer myself, but my kids have two sons that are really into writing. One is, so I'm interested in your nonprofits here because I think, you know, my kids would be really interested in attending some of those conferences. But that's what I always tell them. I said, I don't know much, but I know that authors read.
Yes.
I know that actually really helps to curate and to hone your craft. So I love that. So what kinds of books are you drawn to? What do you read about? What's sort of the genre or the place that you find yourself going?
Yeah, great question. So a lot of books that I read, I really enjoy historical books. I love biographies. I love
Me too.
Hearing people, the way that they share their lives or the way that people observe them through biographies. But there's some of my favorite authors. Charlie Holmberg is one of my favorites, and she's more of a historical romance author, which growing up, I never thought I'd ever read historical romances. You just never know what you're going to like. But I enjoy those. I love sci-fi and fantasy, especially when it comes to humor. And that speaks to my heart as an author. I love when there's humor involved and it's not overly serious. Because as we know, life can be taken either overly serious or with a grain of humor, and we can understand things better.
Truly, truly. If you can't laugh about it, I mean, what are we really doing here?
Right.
So let's talk about your books. So you said that you've five, correct?
Five books, yes.
So you just handed me one, The Adventures in Ride Sharing Lifted. So talk to me about that. I literally am just looking at it right now for the first time.
Yes.
So talk to me a little bit about your books. Maybe specifically this one, but your other books, what are you writing about? This is what you read about. What are you writing about?
Yeah. So when it comes to my writing, I'm kind of all over the board. My first book was a spy thriller. I wanted to be like Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
I love Tom Clancy. And that's when I discovered I'm not Tom Clancy, which is okay.
Yep. Because there already is one. So.
It's true. Absolutely. my second book, Changing Wax, is a fantasy comedy. So it's like Lord of the Rings, but humorous and playful and fun, but still has that serious undertone that you still have to go through in any story. When it came to writing my next book, I had put together a series of short stories that had won awards over the years, and I put them together into one collection so that people could read those, which was a lot of fun. And that one, surprisingly, is a lot of horror and futuristic romance and a little sci-fi in there, which is a lot of fun. It's very different than my other books. Yeah. And then came Lifted. Lifted, I drove Lyft for 3 years. Mm-hmm. It came when we found out that my son, who was born with the two chambers in his heart, he had been put on the heart transplant list. Mm-hmm. So first of all, it's miraculous that you can live 18 years with two chambers in your heart because of our technology these days. But when we found out that he was going to be put on the heart transplant list, we discovered the size of the expenses that go with after. You know, first with the surgery and then the medications after the surgery. And we were well short of being able to be able to meet that. So I started driving Lyft when I was working my full-time job. At the time, I was still volunteering for five nonprofit boards. Jeez. So it was just a little, I thought, you know what? Let's challenge it. It's too easy.
Why not? Just you were just life was just too laid back for you.
So. Exactly. Now, I admit that my kids saw far less of me during those 3 years that I drove Lyft, but I had nearly 2,000 rides. And in my end, the average that Lyft gave me was 5 stars, which was great. And Lyfted is a little bit of the story of why I started driving Lyft. Talks mm-hmm. a little bit about my son and his heart condition. And then it talks about, it tells the story of different rides that happened while I was driving Lyft. Mm-hmm. Some of them were humorous. Some of them were really fun. Some were very unexpected. Some were surprising in not a great way. But it's one of those things that when I put it together, I really wanted people to understand that everybody deserves the chance to be understood, so that you can decide from them individually, you know, if they're good people or bad people, or what situations they're going to be in. And I had conversations with just about everybody. And it was a lot of fun. So writing this book was a passion project, and I really enjoyed that quite a bit. And then my last book, because I do a lot in the community, people would ask how I got into it in the community. So I wrote a book about networking with people and how to make it a little less intimidating, how to make it a little bit more playful, and how to look at it from a different point of view, because as we know, networking, people think has to be, I want to talk to somebody who's going to benefit me in the future. Mm-hmm. And in reality, they have no idea who's going to benefit them in the future. And just because of the way that I've learned how to network, that's what's allowed me to do all of the stuff that I've done, all of the big projects I've worked on, is because I just talked with people and got to know them, and then found out that they had bigger connections, and we were able to do some really wonderful things.
That's incredible. And I love that you're taking your experiences and turning them into these, you know, things that can benefit other people, these books that tell your powerful story. I love that you've done both. I love that you've done the fiction and you're doing sort of a nonfiction, almost autobiographical type book. So it's really incredible. And what a strength you have to put this out and to make a difference. I do want to talk a little bit about more about what you've mentioned your kids, and you mentioned the medical issues and the things that have happened. I know that givers have a hard time being the receivers. So talk maybe a little bit about that experience. I'm assuming, because usually this is the case, that when you've gone through experience like that, you've had people that have come through for you, that have served you, that have, you know, benefited your family in some way and helped your kids and your family. So maybe talk a little bit about that experience, if you would.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. Over the years, there'd be various tough situations. Because my son had gone through 3 different, you know, open heart surgeries before we even got to the transplant, you know, over the years, you know, so many people had chipped in to help either, you know, watch the kids, or they knew that it's not easy to have a parent live at the hospital for a while. And then they've helped us with meals and things like that. One of my favorite things that happened was, so in 2020, right in the heart of the pandemic, that's when we get the call that my son's getting a new heart. Oh. So like, that's the last moment I expected the possibility of it happening. I'm like, well, we're safe. They're not going to call us. It's the pandemic right now. And we got the call, and it was December 7th. And so we packed him up and we drove in to Primary Children's, which was really empty. We hadn't been into Primary Children's during, you know, the COVID. And so we'd only seen Primary Children's very active. So it was really different to see it with hardly any people in it. We go in there and he has his surgery, which, you know, one of the great things about Primary Children's is when we went through the boot camp to teach us about it, we met all of the doctors and all of the nurses. So when he was going through the transplant, we knew everybody who was coming to talk to us, which was really cool. But afterwards, I remember he was recovering and we came up to visit. And then when we were driving home, I just remembered I had a really sore throat. And I was like, oh no. Like I just,
oh my gosh, the panic.
Yeah. I just visited with him. Like I was just there. So I called Primary Children's and I said, hey, I'm really nervous because I've got a really bad sore throat and it was getting worse. It wasn't, and we were just traveling from Primary Children's to Eagle Mountain. And I told him, I said, I'm going to go get a test. I don't know what's going on. I was just there. You know, you need to know this. And they're like, yes, we're going to start taking precautions and looking at things, which is great. And sure enough, I got tested and I did. I was positive for COVID.
Oh, gosh.
The very, very first time I had COVID. And thankfully, he didn't end up getting COVID in the hospital, even though we were just visiting with him. But my family, as being any good family, we share, especially illness.
Of course, so, of course.
But we didn't share it one after another. We waited till time gaps.
Of course. So, that's always how it works with kiddos. Oh, right. It's the worst.
And with COVID going around the house, Jack had been cleared to come home, but he couldn't because COVID was in the house.
Wow.
So as we were going through this whole process, it got delayed and he couldn't come home until January. And so as a family, we decided together that we would, you know, hold off, you know, doing Christmas until he came home, you know, so we could do it as a family. And during that time, the outpouring and love and the things that helped us make that extra special for him when he came home was just, it was huge. It really, it was a game changer and it felt special for everybody.
That's incredible. And you know, the community that comes around and the community of people, that's what, honestly, that's what I love about Utah. It's, I know this happens elsewhere. We've just had such a, you know, we just see it firsthand in so many ways. We see people coming together to help one another, to serve one another, to create community around each other. It really does take a village, whether it's something as involved and scary as a heart transplant for a child. I mean, my goodness. But I see it in everyday situations. I see people just, you know, recognizing a friend is having a bad day or, you know, and just stopping by or giving a hug or, you know, I just see it in so many ways, little ways. What I've been so encouraged about too is just watching young people and the way I know we, you know, as older people, I don't know if I'm older, I don't know what I am, but like, but I feel like, you know, we have this like, you know, we put our fists to the sky and say like these darn kids. But the truth is, you know, every time I'm in a school, every time I'm with young people, high schoolers, middle schoolers, they're so good. They're good to one another. I know they're still bullying. I know there's still problems. But I'm telling you, like, by and large, they're so much better than we were. Don't you feel like that too?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing. I want to talk specifically about some of the other organizations and people you've been involved in and what comes next for you. And we'll do that when we come right back. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We have Jared Kwan, a Spirit of Service Award recipient for the state of Utah. So clearly you've done a lot of work and a lot of serving and a lot of volunteering. We mentioned the boards that you sit on, mostly to do with writing and especially young people and mentoring, which I love. Let's talk a little bit. I know you've also been involved in some other organizations, Jimmer Fredette. So you've done some stuff with him. You've done some stuff with Steve Young. And then I want you to talk about both of those. And then tell me a little bit about, you had a project at West High School I want to hear about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start with Jimmer. I love Jimmer's foundation. I love, Jimmer's the nicest guy, by the way. If people haven't met Jimmer, he is
fantastic. And his organization was part of our conference 2 years ago, our educator conference. So we've been involved. I love what he's doing in schools. So I feel like we love supporting Jimmer's organization as well because it's incredible and it matches, you know, it aligns a lot with what we do.
Yes. Well, and I volunteer a lot for Jimmer's organization, mostly with like his golf tournament to help him raise funds and things like that. I love getting more people involved every year. And anybody who's seen me at the Jimmer tournament, every year I'll grab like an extra 5 or 6 people who don't volunteer normally. I'll say, come do this cool thing with me. And they do. They walk outside their, you know, everyday lives, and they come and volunteer for it. And then they have such a good time. And they enjoy both the experience of volunteering, the experience of hanging out with Jimmer, and getting to understand the organization as well. So Jimmer's, yeah, his anti-bullying message, and that one resonates a lot with me. When I was younger, I did experience some bullying in Arizona as I was growing up. So volunteering for Jimmer's organization was a no-brainer for me. Now for Steve Young's organization, which is a phenomenal organization, he does so much and he has so many different events. He's really cool. And I go and I also volunteer for his golf tournament up at Promontory typically. And it's such a great thing to see how many people come out to support his foundation and how many people really love the message that his foundation has and shares with the community. And I've been really fortunate because both of those organizations supported me on one of my biggest projects. That they were part of 42 different organizations that helped me with my biggest, most ambitious project. And that was the Dream Big project, which involved the West High School, like you were talking about. For that, we were able to accumulate such a massive amount of support and logistics. Initially, it was going to be a free writing conference at West High School. And really, the seed that started this was a TEDx talk given by the Utah's top epidemiologist during the pandemic.
Angela Dunn.
Dr. Dunn. She gave a phenomenal TED talk, helping everyone understand why if you lived west of the I-15, why you were more likely to get COVID. And being a part of the TEDx organization, I was able to have so many wonderful conversations with her, which I would never have had access to Angela Dunn to have these conversations, to understand, you know, the lack of resources and really understanding the community more. Now, I know that they need more than a free writing conference. They need a lot of resources, and I wish I could do even more, and I plan to do more for that community. But my first instinct was to do the one thing I'm strongest at. Let's have a free writing conference to kids at West High School, where really anybody could come, adults and kids, so that it could impact that side of the valley, specifically because I know that getting to a writing conference in Provo, affording an expensive writing conference is just out of the reach of people who have those dreams, and it's not fair, and they deserve that opportunity. So originally it was going to be just a writing conference, a free writing conference at West High School, and West High School was all for it. They were really excited about it. But during our planning phase of this, we got wonderful backing by the Lightweaver Foundation, which is Brandon Sanderson's foundation. All the organizations I volunteer for, I said, hey, would you be, well, you know, possibly want to help with this? And they're like, no, it's a no-brainer. We're all in. Yeah. So many people were just willing to give and try to help out. But as we got closer to putting kind of like the final pieces in place, that's when the economy kind of took a downturn. And we understood from talking with people at West High School, with talking with people who want to attend, that they didn't have the time. They'd have to take on extra jobs to help their families. And to sacrifice a Saturday was going to be massive and problematic. So we shifted. And that's one of the things I'm really proud of. Everybody who backed the plan to have the writing conference said, whatever else we can do. If it doesn't make sense, then let's pivot so we can still make sure we get resources. So what we did, and so many different groups were able to pitch in to help us with connections. And Brandon Sanderson was wonderful. He even recorded a wonderful video for the teens, personal message. And we were able to give, you know, 3,000 books to West High School. So every student would have a Brandon Sanderson book for free when they graduated, or not just at the end of the year, not when they graduated. And we were also able to get them a handful of books from other authors like Dan Wells and Kayla Riviera, some wonderful authors in Utah. And what we were also able to do is get 500 scholarships to attend a digital conference that was being held by the League of Utah Writers. So it was a writing conference that they were going to be able to attend for free. and 500 scholarships to access those things. So it helped us accomplish those things, at least on the base level. Now, it's our hope that one day we'll be able to either to execute the free writing conference we initially dreamed of, or figure out how to make it even easier for them. But what was nice is knowing that they got books and they didn't have to worry about paying for them. They got a wonderful message from Brandon Sanderson, who in Utah is, you know, a household name.
Yep.
And being able to, if they really wanted to, go to a writing conference and not have to pay for it, and then not even have to leave their home, or if they didn't have access to the internet, go to the library, or even at the school, they were able to access those. So it was really cool.
That's incredible. Have you seen when did that take place?
So that took place last year,
okay.
The beginning of last year. Yeah.
So what have you seen since? Have you seen those kids getting there? Have you had the digital conference yet? And what's been the repercussions? What have you seen as far as, you know, the outcomes of your efforts?
Yeah, great question. And this is one of the hardest things to measure. The digital conference happened almost right after we handed out the books at West High School. So it was fresh in everybody's minds and they knew how to access those pieces. The measurement is the tougher part, is to see who took advantage of the conference in the right way, you know, who benefited from them. What we're hoping is that by drawing them to that, and then even during that conference, the digital conference, the League of Utah Writers loves to point to other resources that are free or more accessible. We're hoping that those that wanted to could take advantage of those. But one of the neat things that happened after Dream Big, each conference would always have some scholarships available for people to come to attend for free. But what was really neat is all of those that got to attend there learned about how to access those scholarships. So we gave them an extra path to help them try to reach for those dreams if that's the direction they want to go.
That's powerful and really, you know, a lot of the work that we do in nonprofits, it's hard to know your impact or your reach. A lot of us that, you know, are trying to keep track of this stuff, it's a little tricky, but you can start to see it, especially anecdotally, I'm sure, when you start to talk to those kids who have experienced it. Maybe talk a little bit about barriers. Why do you think people don't get involved? What do you think the barriers are for people maybe doing what you're doing, or, you know, like, there's a lot of people that maybe are intimidated by what volunteerism looks like or service or, you know, some of these things. What do you see as barriers?
I think there's a few different barriers. And even when I started my journey 10 years ago, doing the work I do today, there were barriers that were put in front of me. First of all, there wasn't an easy place for me to find places for me to volunteer that I wanted to, that I was most interested. I mean, I knew about the Boys and Girls Club, which was great, but I'm like, is that where I want to volunteer?
Yeah.
You know, there's one of the earlier barriers was not having enough information to know where the opportunities really were. I know that we're better today than we were 10 years ago, which is nice. But another one of those barriers is everybody thinks that it's some massive time commitment, that it's going to somehow, if you go to volunteer for an hour, it really means 10 somehow. I think we attach these extra weight to it. And then because it's something that especially if they haven't volunteered before and they haven't experienced the joy and they haven't really been into it, it can be easy to make excuses to not go do it. Even if you've found the right one, you've decided you're going to go, and at the last minute, I don't feel very good. Or I'd rather go hang out with my brother or something, you know. There's it's easier to make excuses to get into it. I think also another threshold is people are afraid to go someplace outside their comfort zone and look like they don't know what they're doing. It's embarrassing, you know.
Nobody wants to look like a dummy.
Right. Yeah. When you go someplace for the first time and you feel like a fish out of water, yeah, then you feel like you're just embarrassing yourself and you're probably not helping. That's what you think. But the neat thing is, and I've been fortunate over the years, even when I very first started volunteering with the West Jordan Arts Council, the literary chair, who at the time, John Pulver, he took me under his wing and said, hey, let me show you how to access all this. Let me teach you how to interface better with the Arts Council and the city and these different pieces that I didn't have that understanding. And he was very patient with me when I would give these just astronomical things like, I wish we could do this. And he's like, that's not possible, with the budgets we have, kind of things. It was really neat because there, and at each stop, when I went to the League of Utah Writers, I found a mentor there in Amanda Lazader or Johnny Worthen. These people were there to help. And I found no matter where I went, there always are people who are happy. Both they're very patient and they're more than happy to take the time to help you find where you're best, how you can best fit into that environment where you can volunteer. So you might be out of fish out of water for 30 seconds and then you're in, then it's good. And then for those of us that volunteer, we know that it doesn't take much to kind of be a little addicted to it. The feeling of how good you feel when you see the look on somebody's face when you help them is just game changing. It's a whole different thing.
You know, that was going to be my next question. I've talked a lot on this program and throughout the state about, and Spencer and I have been really passionate about the research around mental health and the good and the things that, you know, the positive mental health that comes out of serving and volunteering. So that was going to be my next question. You're clearly seeing that in yourself. What else have you seen? Have you seen in your kids or in people around you where your mental health is actually improved through your volunteering and your service?
Yeah, both the mental health as well as a better understanding of the world at the mm-hmm. same time. Those both kind of walk hand in hand with each other when you go to volunteer for things. I've seen so many people who struggle with social issues or anxieties who, when we put them in the right situation in a volunteering environment, it helps them as a type of therapy. It helps them be able to navigate those waters a little bit easier. And it also helps because sometimes they don't feel comfortable telling people that they struggle with those things. But when they start volunteering and getting close with people, then just letting somebody know sometimes is a massive, you know, form of relief mentally so that you're not struggling alone. And somebody can help, right? If I see somebody struggling at a conference, I'm like, okay, what are the possibilities, and then how can I help this person? And just those little ways makes life easier for other people and people who volunteer as well. Now, one of the things, of course, when there were opportunities, I would bring my kids to volunteer for different things, whether it's painting a mural downtown or whether it was volunteering for the Utah Film Festival or these different things. My kids weren't particularly excited to go look forward to go volunteering. But one of the things I noticed is that after we were there, after we were volunteering, the kids would have fun. They would enjoy it. And then they would be these wonderful memories. And sometimes that world perspective piece, like I've helped out with the Kindness Project, which helps feed the homeless downtown. I took my kids to, especially, you know, I wanted to make sure that they understood that the world isn't perfect. And also to not be afraid of interfacing with that part of the world. And so being able to go out into the community, go help feed the homeless and interact, those are things that, I mean, I know it helped them and I'll help in the future.
You know, your story is exactly, you know, it feels very familiar to me as well. One thing you mentioned was, you know, with your kids and ourselves, a lot of the time, you know, we do, I always feel like when I was getting into running, a friend of mine who was a good runner, and she was helping me get into running, and she said to me, you have to sign up for a race and then tell everyone you're doing it. Now, not that we want to tell everyone that we're doing service, but sometimes what you're saying is like, just sign up for it. Just call and say, I'm coming, or, you know, wherever that organization is, wherever your passion is, wherever, you know, wherever that mentor is, somebody that can guide you into that place, sign up and just go. Get yourself there. It's hard. I lots of times I'll sign up for something and think the day comes, I'm like, oh no, I have 500 things that are going on. I just had this experience with my daughter shortly before Christmas. You know, it's always such a crazy pace. And and she said to me, I'm just not feeling the Christmas spirit. And I said, okay, well, what can we do? And And I thought, well, of course, me, I'm like, I think you should serve somebody. I think you should volunteer somewhere. That actually brings that out in us. So I called my friends down at St. Vinny's and went and signed her and I up to go serve dinner at the homeless shelter there, or, you know, where the dining hall that they serve dinner at. And the day came and I was worried because she hadn't come home from school yet. And I was texting her. I'm like, you're not, we got to go. What are you doing? And, well, I've got this. I've got homework. I really don't have time for that. And I thought, okay, I'm really going to put my foot down. I'm going to put my foot down today. This was your, you know, this is the way we're going to kind of get in the spirit and really think about somebody else beside ourselves. And anyway, she said, no, I really have to turn this in. And I said, okay, start working on it. And we drove down to St. Vinny's and she literally sat while we were getting prepped for the dinner. She was finishing up her assignment in the car. And then she came in and, you know, we still had to go do lots of things after we got done to help her finish up her schoolwork. But that was a moment. You know, it's hard. It's not always easy. And to your point, though, as soon as she was done, it was a whole different ballgame. She felt she was happy. She was excited. There is literal scientific evidence of the chemical benefits, the mental health benefits, the physical benefits of volunteering and serving. And I love too the emotional benefits and the emotional intelligence that we gain that you talked about when you learn about somebody else's story. When, you know, I have never experienced homelessness. But for the grace of God, you know, there, that could be me. And to put yourself in that situation, to try to look at somebody instead of it's othering them, to try to understand somebody, no matter what it is, if it's a refugee, if it's a student at West High School that hasn't had opportunities that you're giving them, you know, if it's somebody, you know, a child that a student who wants to write, but doesn't have the right mentors, you know, whatever that looks like. I just love the fact that you're doing that and you're a powerful example of that. Is there anything else? What else, you know, do you wish somebody that was trying to figure this out or get into volunteering? What would you tell them?
Well, first I would tell them that it's not a huge commitment. Just the little bit of the smallest amount of volunteering makes a big difference. Even if it's just 1 hour a month or a year, just something, putting that little bit of effort in actually makes a massive impact. One of my favorite things is when I worked for a technology company, we listened to this wonderful talk behind the software engineer of Windows Explorer. And he was talking about how he just made an update that was going to save like 1/10 of a second for load time between stuff. And he really brought it forward by saying, listen, 1/10 of a second doesn't seem like a lot. But when you think of everybody who clicks the button and all the tenths of seconds, it ends up saving like a year worth of searching. You've saved that much time. Everybody as a whole, as a collective, saves that much time. And the same thing applies to service. Your little bit of service might not seem like a big deal, but it's the collective effort, all of us together, even the smallest amounts, when they're all combined together, that's when it becomes this really impressive thing. And it takes everybody. The community becomes better. You begin to understand neighbors better. You're able to understand people around you better just from those little efforts, even if it's small. Now, with that being said, there are many wonderful efforts, a lot of organizations who need people to volunteer more or less. And I encourage people to step outside their comfort zone. And that's easier said than done.
Truly.
Just like you said, sometimes you got to let everybody know that that's your plan. Yeah. That's what I did when I very first went out to volunteer. My wife and I came up with a plan. And I told some friends too. I'm like, I'm going to volunteer more. And I went to a meeting, my very first meeting of the League of Utah Writers, this local chapter. And I didn't know anybody there. I sat in the back of the room like everybody would. And the chapter president came up and said, hey, sorry, the previous chapter president had to step down. They were taking over, but they needed a new vice president. And I said, well, good luck to whoever that is. You know, that's definitely not me. And this voice in the back of my mind kept thinking, well, I said I needed to volunteer more. So I texted my wife and said, hey, so there's this thing. They need a vice president, but I'm too busy, right? I just started volunteering for the Arts Council. We've got the kids. You know, I came up with all of the excuses in a single text. It was probably really long. And she replied and said, this is exactly what we talked about. She said, you need to at least put an effort out there. And so I thought, that's not the answer I want. So I texted a friend and just said, I'm just curious, do you think I'd be any good at something like this? And they're like, are you kidding me? This is what you said you wanted to do. And I'm like, fine. So
we're doing this.
Right? So I did the least effort possible. I while there in the back of the meeting, I constructed an email on my phone that just said, hey, if nobody else volunteers, you know, please consider me. And I copied my LinkedIn address and put it in there just so they could see what I've done and sent it. And by the end of the meeting, the chapter president came running over and said, you're the new vice president. And I said, you don't even know who I am. Like, this is my first meeting. And I joked. I said, I could be a serial killer. And she said, we're writers. We're all serial killers. So the group loved and embraced me right from that very get-go. And because I did that first big step, and because I told everybody, just like you did also, as soon as I told everybody to back my play, it became this trickle effect into more and more things that I was uncomfortable with. Everybody's like, this is what you said you wanted to try and do. And they kept motivating me, and I kept moving that direction. And that's what's let me do all of the big stuff I've done today. Now, nobody has to go all in with like 5 nonprofit boards.
Right.
That's a little bit much. I typically don't recommend it. But that place outside of our comfort zone is where a lot of great things happen. And not enough people take the time to try and step out of that comfort zone.
I agree. And, you know, I think it's you have an incredible story of service, and that is why you were the recipient of the Spirit of Service Award, because of what you're doing and because of the impact that you've had on the community. So thank you again for being with us here today, and we appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Thanks. Thank you.
You can find more information about Jared at jaredkwan.com. Thanks for being a friend.